read it out loud for us. Let's just read it through and just absorb the poetry itself without overthinking, just attending to whatever we hear. And then I'll go back through and share some of the details. I put on the bottom there the verses, but don't worry too much about the verses. They're just for reference later. If you want to say, verse 3 or whatever, it's just for reference later. Okay, chapter 2 of the song starts like this. I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. As a lily among brambles, so is my love among maidens. As an apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among young men. With great delight I sat in his shadow, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his intention toward me was love. Sustain me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love. Oh, that his left hand were under my head, and that his right hand embraced me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or the wild does, do not stir up or awaken love until it is ready. Nolan, can you go back one? Thanks. The voice of my beloved, look, he comes leaping upon the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. My clicker was working, but it's not now, so you can take over. Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing in at the windows, looking through the lattice. My beloved speaks and says to me, arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. For now the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth its figs, and the vines are in blossom. They give forth fragrance. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. O my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the covert of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice. For your voice is sweet, and your face is lovely. Catch us the foxes, the little foxes, that ruin the vineyards, for our vineyards are in blossom. My beloved is mine, and I am his. He pastures his flock among the lilies. Until the day breeze and the shadows flee, turn, my beloved, be like a gazelle or a young stag on the cleft mountains. Okay, there's Song of Songs 2. We'll talk a little bit about the letter. We'll discern the spirit. Before we do that, just attend to whatever stood out to you. We're not going to share this out loud right now, but maybe take 30 seconds to share with someone sitting next to you, what did you hear on this read through Song of Songs 2? Any lines stand out? Any phrases? Any themes? Just to get us thinking, share with someone sitting next to you. Don't take too long. Just share briefly. What stood out? Okay, did you have a chance to share some initial thoughts, or at least in your minds, something that stood out to you, something you heard? Okay, so let's do this. Let's do just a little bit of context setting. Let's hear the letter. By the letter, I just mean, the literal text itself. Some of the language here is confusing. Some of it needs just a touch of context to understand it. So we'll go over a few of those things. We don't have to dwell on them too strongly. But when we're done, then we will together discern the spirit. What is God speaking to us? What are we speaking to God and to one another? So, okay, let's go through this. Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 1. It begins, of course, with the voice of the lover saying, by the way, when I say lover and beloved, typically the voice of the lover is the woman in the story. The voice of the beloved is the man. That doesn't really matter for this. I'll just use the language of lover and beloved. So the lover says, I'm a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. Those two words, rose of Sharon and lily, no one knows exactly what flowers they're even referring to here. We say rose of Sharon, and it's just a guess. There aren't actually roses that grew in Israel, so you know it's rose of Sharon is a guess because it's maybe an offshoot of it. Lilies were present, but again, the word's uncertain. So this is just people's best guess. It could be other flowers. The idea here is it sounds as if the lover is speaking with some modesty here. I'm just an ordinary flower. There's lots of flowers in the valley. I'm one of them, right? Speaking with a little bit of modesty. And it also may be that the lover is saying, I'm like a flower in general. Flowers being soft and delicate. Fragrance, often, you know, appealing. And even the shape of a flower. We have the benefit of living after, what's that, the famous painter's name? Yes, George O'Keeffe. Yes, thank you. We have the benefit of living after George O'Keeffe, who painted all those flowers. If you've seen those close-up flowers that are, you know, shockingly erotic, actually, right? As she paints those flowers, it may be that she's just, that the lover here is just referring to themselves as a flower in that sense. But in the end, we can't be 100% certain exactly what the letter here means. But what we do know is this. There. The beloved responds. As a lily among brambles, so is my love among maidens. The beloved turns the lover's words into a compliment. The lover may have just been humble. I'm just a flower like all other flowers. But the beloved says, no, you are like a lily among brambles. You're a flower among weeds and thorns. That is my love among maidens. And so the lover then returns the compliment. So there is this back and forth of complimenting one another. Regardless of whatever Rose of Sharon means, there's this back and forth of complimenting one another. So now it's the lover's turn to compliment. And the lover says, as an apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among young men. That may not feel like much of a compliment to us, by the way, but the gist is this. Most of the forest's trees do not bear fruit. This is, my beloved is fruitful. That's, I think, the sentiment here. As an apple tree among the just trees that don't bear that type of fruit, that's my beloved among young men. And then the lover goes on to say, with great delight, I sat in his shadow, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. The lover turns from the simile as an apple tree and moves into a metaphor that scholars presume refers to sexual fulfillment here. So it goes from simile to this metaphor for sexual fulfillment, which becomes very direct in what follows. He brought me to the banqueting house. His intention toward me was love. And then there's this line, sustain me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I am faint with love, as if to say, after being together, there's refreshment needed. Recuperation of some sort, refreshed with delicate foods, for the lover is faint with love. That phrase, most literally from the Hebrew, is love sick. We translate it as faint with love. I'll tell you how the mystics often translated it, but we translate it as faint with love. But literally, it's love sickness. As if to say, love sickness, whether because of absence or because of the just delight of the fulfillment of it, seems to be a universal feeling. Seems to be something universal. Dennis?
Well, also, God is God. One of the descriptions of God is Jehovah Nisi.
Nisi, yeah.
In other words, being a banner. When
Can you speak into the mic so the people on Zoom can hear you?
In other words, I believe it's Jehovah Nissi.
Yeah.
In other words, is God being a banner? In other words, being the actual, we're covered the banner of love, to where, in other words, we're reminded that out of the banner of love, he has this protective banner over us that we need, that everything we need and desire is in him. And so, maybe I'm going the wrong direction.
Yeah, no, that's good. Those are good thoughts. And in fact, maybe we'll come back to it as we discern the spirit a little bit after hearing the letter. Maybe we'll come back to those type of thoughts on how that might be directing us in our covenant with God.
Directing us on a daily basis as far as all our needs are met in him. His desire is to love us, to care for us, and we want to stay under that protective banner as we walk each day. And also encourage others to do the same. I mean, that.
Yeah, no, that's good. Thank you. And I mean, you know, what Dennis points out there, it's interesting to think of, you know, I'm faint with love. I'm love sick here. By the way, the mystics translated that word from the Greek. So, you know, we don't have the oldest manuscripts of this of this book, right? We have copies of copies of copies. And some of the copies we have are in Greek, and they're older than the Hebrew, although we're translating this from the Hebrew. So it's interesting. But the Greek version of the Old Testament, the Septuagint, it says, I am wounded with love, which is the way the mystics always talked about, that when you experience love, it actually wounds you, but it's a joyful wound. Lovesick is a good thing, but it's still a difficult thing. So wounded and good all together here. Anyway, you can take that as you want. But you can hear on the theological reading, as Dennis was pointing out, a lovesickness when God is absent. That very same, we're going to hear it in just a minute, where it's... just let me see your face. Let me hear your voice. You can hear that same love sickness even in communion with God. Where you're just praying, please just say one word to me. Please just show me a glimpse of your face in this world around me when it feels absent, right? That's the sentiment that's going on here. Okay, and then the lover goes on to say, and this is a significant line, oh, that his left hand were under my head and that his right hand embraced me. The NRSV, which is this version up here, makes it sound like a wish. Oh, that it were the case. You could also translate it as, his left hand is under my head. It could just be a declarative statement. His right hand does embrace me. It could go either way. You just have to take a guess on it. And the NRSV went more in the wish way. But either way, here's the point. There is a much cited Mesopotamian parallel to these exact words that we have records of from the, you know, ancient words that were very popular and well known because we find them in several different documents. And they almost quote these words directly, with one significant, and prepare yourself, one significant difference. And so let me tell you what that is. Parallel to these words, the Mesopotamian love poetry has the exact same first line. Oh, that his left hand were under my head, and that his right hand, and here's where the difference is, exactly as the song has it, but then it says, the embracing right hand, and I'm quoting here, oh, that his left hand were under my head, and that his right hand were on my vulva. That's the language of the Mesopotamian parallel to this. So, scholars say two things out of that. One, it's very likely that the person who wrote this poem knew that line. So then, why not quote it directly? And the suggestion is something like this. All throughout the Song of Songs, this is the first instance of it, but all throughout the Song of Songs, there is a level of modesty. There's a reticence to speak explicitly about private, intimate things. And so it speaks in metaphor. and simile, because it wants to celebrate those things, and it wants to celebrate them in a way that is modest, following a degree of propriety, so to speak. Again, a reticence to make entirely public what is often best experienced privately and personally, such that it's trying to celebrate it without turning it into pornography in the worst of whatever that may mean, right? It's trying to celebrate it without exploiting it. It's trying to lift it up as a good, worth calling the best metaphor we have for our relationship with God, while at the very same time, not turning it into abusive exploitation. That probably is what's going on here, and the explanation for the shift in the very common language that was known ahead of time and quoted almost directly until the end of the verse. So, anyway, for what it's worth, probably helpful to sort of know that. Okay. Oh, that his left hand were under my head, and that his right hand embrace me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or wild does. Nobody is quite certain why you would make a binding oath by gazelles or wild does. It's never in any other literature whatsoever. And so it's just a bunch of guesses. You know, we swear by God or on my honor or by the Bible or, you know, whatever. No one in the history of writing has ever sworn by gazelles or wild does except for in the Song of Songs. And so no one's quite sure why that is. A couple guesses are the word for gazelles sounds a lot like the word for hosts, like heavenly hosts. The word for does sounds a lot like the word for mighty ones. So like maybe I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the mighty heavenly hosts, which would make maybe more sense. But literally it is gazelles and wild does. Another guess is this, that maybe it's more about what they represent. You know, not literally the gazelles or wild does, but what they represent, which is these creatures are graceful and beautiful. And in fact, the word for gazelles, the exact same word, also means beauty. So, you know, so it could be by grace and beauty. And then there's this line, do not stir up or awaken love until it is ready. It's not clear which of the two is speaking at this point, but it hardly matters. The suggestion is something like they're speaking to this chorus. One of the two, either the lover or beloved, is speaking to the chorus saying, hey, don't wake up my beloved after this embrace that we've had. I don't want this moment to end. Others suggest maybe what that means is something like don't stir up or awaken love until it is ready. Maybe it's something like love just has to develop over time. It should never be rushed. It's too important to take frivolously. It's too important to rush into. Maybe. Again, your guess is as good as anyone else's because no one's quite sure exactly what that means. Okay, let me move more quickly through the rest of this. The voice of my beloved. Look, he comes leaping over the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Every time I read this, I think of the Proclaimers, I would walk 500 miles. Like, this is how far my beloved would come. He would leap over mountains for me. He would bound over hills. He would walk 500 miles just to be the man who walked 1,000 miles to fall down at my shore. Yeah, so that's what I hear every time I hear this. Okay, my beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. It's interesting. You would expect someone to say, my beloved is like a lion or is like a stallion. That was much more common in ancient poetry. This language doesn't mention lions or stallions at all. So it's intriguing that they choose these gentle, graceful, beautiful creatures that are much more common, say, to the Garden of Eden, where everyone was just graceful and beautiful, than the mountain or the lion that, you know, eats things and the stallion that conquers things. It's intriguing that that's the language that's chosen here. Yes. Yeah. I don't know. Did I moved? I didn't mean to. Okay. As if to say love is, you know, is not about power and strength, but participating in the grace and the beauty of the Garden of Eden. All right, look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing in at the windows, looking through the lattice. That sounds for all the world like a stalker. It does, right? You cannot read it except for hearing it like a stalker, like he's peeping through my windows? How is that romantic? But you have to imagine, in the world they lived in, it appears the lover still lived with their family in a compound. And you've got this, like, fence around, and you're not allowed, unless you're part of the family, you're not allowed just to come in that compound. The best you can do is stand outside and sort of call for people. You sort of peek in and say, hey, can, you know, come out. And so that's sort of the imagery you should have here. I don't think this is about stalking, as far as I can tell. But the beloved is peering through the gate into the lover's parents' compound. The only place the beloved can be in this situation, and just pleading for the lover to come out to them. And then my beloved speaks and says to me, arise, my love, my fair one, come away. For now the winter is past, the rain is gone, the flowers appear on the earth. There's a springtime feeling here, right? That's the gist of all of this. The voice of the turtle dove is heard in the land. King James, by the way, translated that just turtle, not turtle dove, which is too bad that we don't have that, because there was this image of a singing turtle, which is bizarre and wonderful all at the same time, but no one translates it that way any longer. The voice of the singing turtle is heard in our land. Oh, I would love that. Fig tree puts forth its figs, the vines are in blossom, they give forth fragrance. There is this spring feel, very verdant feel here. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the covert of the cliff. The lover is being called to put away whatever shyness they have that hides them, and to be vulnerable, to be courageous. This is what love is going to require: vulnerability and courage, putting away shyness. Let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. Again, you can imagine that, like we mentioned a moment ago, that prayer to God, just let me see your face. Let me get a glimpse of it, because I don't see you in this world. Let me just hear your voice for a second. Speak, God. What's interesting here is in this poem, typically the lover stands for us, the beloved stands for God. This isn't the lover speaking to the beloved. This isn't us speaking to God. It's the other way around. This is God speaking to us. Let me see your face. Let me hear your voice. As if God is that bashful youth standing outside the gate of our compound, peering in through the windows and saying, please, come out to me. So again, it's interesting. This isn't simply us pleading for God. This is God pleading for us in the theological reading. That we want to hold, again, while we simultaneously hold the literal reading, the overt reading as well. Okay. Let me see your face. Let me hear your voice. Your voice is sweet. Your face is lovely. Oh, this also, speaking of pop culture references, do you remember that movie Say Anything with John Cusack? This reminds me of John Cusack standing outside the gate of Diane's house. You remember in that movie, and he's holding up the boom box, and he's playing Peter Gabriel's In Your Eyes. Yes, yeah. This is, that's it. Yeah, this is what this reminds me of. You know, the beloved is standing outside the gate holding up the boom box like John Cusack. The beloved in the theological reading is God holding up the boom box, waiting for Diane, us, to come out here in the theological reading of this. Okay, and then there's this bizarre line. Catch us, the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, for our vineyards are in blossom. Vineyards in the poem has already been associated with bodies, but no one's quite sure what this means. What are the foxes? How do they ruin bodies? How is the beloved supposed to do anything about that? What does it mean to catch them? Again, we can imagine the Spirit can speak to us through this verse, but as far as the letter of the verse goes, no one's 100% sure what that means or how it even fits into the poem. So anyway, we'll see what the Spirit shares with us. And then there's this wonderful line. My beloved is mine and I am his. In the Hebrew, it just simply says this: beloved, mine. I, his. That's all it says. It is emphatic. In fact, this poem is filled with similes and metaphors and analogies. All of those are gone. And now all of a sudden, it's just straightforward, direct talk. Beloved, mine. I, his. Sort of reminiscence of God saying, I will be their God. They will be my people. Except for, again, this is the other way around. This is like us saying, you will be our God. we will be your people. You know, backwards from the way that the scripture typically puts it. Anyway, it's quite a beautiful sentiment. My beloved is mine, I am his. He pastures his flocks among the lilies. This is back to metaphor again. Again, displaying the modesty that this poem offers up. A reticence, to be explicit, although the metaphor could not be more clear, probably, in this context here. Could probably hardly be more transparent what the lover is talking about here. Until the day breeze and the shadows flee, that probably just means all night or all day, however you take that. Turn, my beloved, be like a gazelle or a young stag on the cleft mountains. Formerly, the beloved was compared to a gazelle and a stag. Now the lover is just called to be a gazelle and stag. The cleft mountains previously was a reference to that word cleft is just a guess in Hebrew, by the way. They're not sure, but if it does mean cleft, cleft was previously used to refer to the lover. So it may be like this line says, turn, my beloved, be like grace and beauty upon my body, upon me. That may be what it's suggesting here. But again, the Hebrew's uncertain. Okay, so there we go. That is a lot of the letter. Beautiful, confusing, interesting, modest, but nevertheless clear on what it's talking about, transparent. And so let's ask ourselves this. What do we hear? What do we hear God speaking to us through these words? What do we hear about human-to-human intimacy? What do we hear about human-to-divine intimacy? What stands out to you? What do you receive? Let's share a little bit. Okay, Dennis, do we have a mic somewhere? Seth? Oh, yeah, mine. Okay, thanks. Dennis, go ahead.
I can speak loud enough, but hear me.
Yeah, we'll hear you, but the people on Zoom won't.
Okay. What I hear is like when I see the, let me see your face, hear your voice.
That's my welcome person, sorry.
God being connected to us, not being in isolation.
Mm. Right, that's good. And the language of the fruitfulness and all of that comes from this intimacy as opposed to isolation.
I'm thinking of the raisins.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of the apples. I'm just thinking about the sustenance of the connection that we have with God on an ongoing basis. It's an intimacy it's like a marriage.
Yeah, remember the mic just for the people on Zoom.
It's similar to a marriage, to where there's that.
Yes, absolutely.
There's that actual connection where the two become one, and therefore they see things differently, but yet they see things together in so many different aspects.
Right. Oh, that's good. Before service, thanks. Dennis, before service, or before class, Dan Dickens and I were talking about how often this poem tries to overcome separation, isolation, dualism, back to this unity. He is mine, I am his. We are one together. Tries to bring that over and over. And then that's where we're sustained and nourished. In fact, we'll hear in our gospel reading our relationship with Christ. Christ is the very bread of life. Good. Marty, and then Jen, and then Wendy, sorry, and then there must have been a hand up over here, too.
It's probably because of my age, but I remember a song that we used to sing when I was probably 4 years old about Jesus being the lily of the valley.
Yes, yes.
And another one is the banner.
Can you do closer into the microphone, like right up to your lips?
It's because my voice is so bad.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Just that you remembered singing the song where Jesus is the lily of the valleys. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember singing this song when I was about 4 years old. We had a man that every time he'd lead singing, he would sing that song.
Right,
I don't remember the words except it was the lily of the valley, the rose of Sharon.
Yes.
And also the song we sing, His Banner Opus Is Love, is from this
scripture
as well.
Right.
So I think it's so interesting that we grab things out.
We pulled these lines out of the song. And it worked for our conception of our relationship with divine was... you know, in this song, it's the human side saying, I'm the lily of the valleys. And yet in that song, it says, Christ is the lily of the valleys, which is beautiful. And it's nice that we pulled that out. Okay, Jen, thanks. That's a good memory. Let's do Jen, then Wendy, and then someone had a hand up over here, Minerva.
I think Jeff Deathridge said something similar to this last week.
Yeah.
But it's very much a struggle for me to see this, any of this,
right,
as a relationship with God. I have no problem seeing how this is God's directive,
right,
for us to...
Celebrating human intimacy.
Celebrating human intimacy,
yeah,
and that is a God-given thing that we,
right,
should do, and how that is very important. But my relationship with God is the capital F, capital M, mother-father relationship.
Yes, yes.
You know, like, when people talk about God as daddy, like, I'm like, ooh, creepy.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, thinking about it as that, like, that, it there's, and again, this, and I know it's very much a personal thing for me. There's a South Park episode where they talk about the best way to make money is to take a love song and just turn all of the words into God.
Yes.
And you could take any popular love song,
right,
and make it a God song, because then, and you know,
right.
And that's kind of,
yes,
like that. And I know that's my thing, and other people like, but it feels cringy to me. And
yes,
I know that's a personal thing, and that is the intent, but it's a hard thing for me.
Man, I suspect you and Jeff are not alone in that, right? We talked a little bit last week of what would it be like if the Song of Songs was the lens, so to speak, through which we read the rest of what we learn about God in Scripture. What if that was the lens we began with? How differently would we hear about God's covenant with us, what we're meant to be in relationship with God and with one another? I suspect radically different. We would hear all this language of the Gospels and of Christ so differently if this was the lens through which we began thinking about and conceiving. For the time being, however, this is not the place we Church of Christ people have dwelt, and even beyond Church of Christ, right? This is not where we have dwelt, and so it is weird, and it's different, and it's strange for us, and it can be off-putting, honestly. I mean, let's just be honest. It can be off-putting to think in that way, and nevertheless, we're told by a history of good, faithful folks, you can actually lean into this and it will be good for you. It will be good for you to begin your prayers, oh, kiss me with the kisses of your mouth, even though it's hard for me to even imagine doing that, but it might take some practice. We'll give ourselves 8 weeks of practicing it and maybe be inspired to consider it. But I think it's a great point, and I think everyone empathizes directly with it. So, Wendy?
Well, I have to tell this story while John's gone.
Yeah.
Because long before John Cusack ever held that boombox,
uh-huh,
John and I were in Western Kentucky University, and I was with my girls, and he was with his guys. And one day we heard music coming off the street, and so I opened the door, and there was John on the doorstep with his accordion,
oh, wow,
playing my old Kentucky
Oh,
home.
Wow. Oh, my.
Is that not the most romantic thing
it
you've
is
ever heard?
It is. It
okay
is. Thank you for sharing that.
It's okay. But what I really wanted to say was, I was moved, which, you know, that's not that hard to do to move me. But
yeah.
I was moved to tears when we were reading the part about come away with me.
Yes.
I don't know what's going on with my voice. But I think that is that deep emotional power that God has over us, mm, and Jesus has over us is the same but a little different than, you know, the provocative kind of love.
Right. Right.
That's what I got today.
Right. Oh, that's good. Thanks for sharing that. You know, it's interesting that the song, in our age, romanticism is looked down upon just a little bit, honestly. And for good reasons, because it became overly sentimental in negative ways or whatever. The song is not embarrassed about romanticism without cynicism or irony. It's not embarrassed about saying, come away with me, my beautiful one. I just long to hear your voice and see your face. It's not embarrassed to say that. And giving us permission to lean into it perhaps in a healthy way as well, as John did, and then perhaps as we might do with God in some way. Minerva?
So a few things caught my eye. One of them was obviously there's such gentle and beautiful imagery. Mm. And when the man or the woman says to be gentle with me, it reminds me of what power love has over us. Mm-hmm. It can break us. It can mend us. And, you know, for me, I've done both. And I've been broken and mended at the same time. So it's great when, you know. And also when it says the shadows flee, it truly shows, you know, when the beauty of when the light shines. Mm. On our faces, and we feel free. I want to find someone who brings the light out in you. That's
right.
What you need.
Yeah. Now, what beautiful poetic thoughts. Thanks, Minerva. That was wonderfully expressed as well. And I love that sentiment about the beauty, the gentleness, the gracefulness of it, because love can be abused like everything else, right, and become a thing of power that wounds purposely in some negative way. But this is helping us envision a form of love that we're called to practice that it is gentle and is not the stallion or the lion, but it's the beautiful doe and the graceful gazelle. And yet it does cause sickness, love sickness, but it wounds and heals all at the same time. Anyway, really well put. Thank you. Pete?
Well, first of all, I'm always amazed by Minerva.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing.
It was beautiful.
So I think this is probably obvious, but I want to just state the obvious, that I think we struggle with two extremes. We either over-sexualize intimacy or over-romanticize it, or mm-hmm. on the other end, under-sexualize
right.
or under-romanticize.
Right.
Like, it's hard for us to see that those are parts of the bigger picture of what intimacy is, and those are ways to express it that are very human.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's yeah. What a great reminder. And again, it touches on, this is an explicit valuation of human intimacy, right? And intimacy with God as well. It's explicit, but explicit in a way that's not, the extreme that you're talking about. That turns into whatever negative version of pornography could turn into, right? Making what is intimate and private public in a way that abuses it somehow. But it's not avoiding it either. And so it is trying to chart some type of way in between those extremes, just avoiding it, or the extreme that could be abused or whatever. Trying to find some way in between there that's healthy, it seems. Linda?
I liked what Minerva said very much, and it reminded me of Until the Day Breathes and the Shadows Flee.
Yeah.
There was a season of about 3 years where Brian had to work in another state, Monday through Thursday. And I realized that, like now, I can walk out in the dark at night to the back of my property, which is a good walk now mm-hmm. for me. And when Brian's home, I feel safe and secure, even though he's somewhere in the house. But when he was gone, I came to realize that, you know, God had his hand on me. And I didn't want to be fearful in a place that I love. And I was going to trust that he was looking after me. And so it was a very different feeling, but it was very similar in a sense
right.
as well. You know, when Brian's there, I feel safe. When God is there, I feel safe. Even though I'm walking alone both ways, I can see having a beloved near you and having realizing how God is that beloved, and you know, he keeps me safe in in that interior life, the place that you feel it inside.
Right.
Because my own father at one point said, "You want to live under all these really big trees? What if a cougar got up there?" So there's a part of my brain always goes,
"Right, right.
There's a cougar up there."
Right. So now you're worried, yeah.
Thanks, Dad.
Yes. Thanks. I appreciate that comparison between the two and the way that it impacts interiorly. Yeah. Well, and that's a good segue then into this. Thanks, Linda. Let me share with you. Oh goodness. All right. Okay, let me share with you this. This is from Bernard of Clairvaux, 12th century theologian and mystic. And it just emphasizes something that'll be important as we hear. Bernard's talking about this chapter in particular, but it says something that will matter for the entire poem. And so I want to end with it, just as a reminder as we continue on with this. Bernard asks this: "What does she, that is the lover, say when she says, 'He for me and I for him'? We do not know because we do not feel what she feels. Oh, holy soul, what is this 'he' for you? What are you for him? What, I beg to know, is so familiarly and gracefully given and returned between you? He is for you and you in turn are for him, but what is exchanged?" Trying to say, okay, how would I put that into words? And Bernard goes on to say, "Are you the same for him as he is for you? Or something different? Can you speak to our understanding and tell us what you feel? Or, in the words of the prophet, is the secret for you alone? This I judge is how it is. Affect," like affection, "affect has spoken, not intellect. Affect has spoken, not intellect. And so, not for the intellect." This poem is not for the intellect. For what then? For nothing, except that she, miraculously delighted, could neither remain silent nor tell what she feels. Her mouth spoke from the abundance of her heart, but not for that abundance. Affect has its own language. All of which is to say, we're going to talk a lot about what we hear in this poem. The fact is, affect has its own language. It's going to work on you beyond what we ever say out loud. We couldn't even put it into words. And so the beloved and the lover do the best they can in poetry, and it's even more than that. Affect, love, has its own language. So here's my encouragement again. Maybe practice some of this language in your own prayers and see what that does for your affect and your connection with God. Okay, that's where we're end. We'll pick up again in 3 weeks, next 2 weeks, Camino folks. All right, see you back in a few minutes. Yeah.